Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
There are already more than 2,200 dead, and the number is rising every day. Earthquake disaster in Afghanistan, you surely have heard about it. And this earthquake disaster hits a country that is already battered like hardly any other. Afghanistan is probably one of the countries on earth that suffers the most from man-made climate change. And then, unfortunately, this country also lies in a region where tectonic plates constantly rub against each other and cause earthquakes. I was traveling in Afghanistan when this earthquake struck. I was there to accompany the work of Friedensdorf International to support aid projects. And so we went to the earthquake region to see what the situation was like. We spoke with survivors and we saw how entire villages lay in ruins. So I spoke on the ground with people who had lost so much, with doctors who had hardly slept for days and were providing help. And one question always remained for me: how do you actually go on living when you suddenly lose everything?
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
Welcome to In Crisis Mode. I am Jan Jessen, head of politics and war and crisis reporter for the Funke Media Group in Germany. Normally, I report on wars and conflicts. This time, it was a natural disaster that hit a country already truly very afflicted. Afghanistan, I always say when I report about the country, is for me such a country that basically is cursed. This country is constantly struck by natural disasters. Last year, there were quite a lot of floods, flash floods, especially in the Bahlan region. The year before that, so now 2 years ago, there was a huge earthquake in Herat in the west of the country. Now it has hit the east of the country. And on top of that, of course, the country has been ruled again for 4 years by the radical Islamic Taliban, who impose their own rules. And the economic situation in Afghanistan is also truly a catastrophe. So it is a very, very difficult environment that we entered when 14 days before this recording, we went to Afghanistan together with Friedensdorf International. And the actual task we had was to select children for treatment in Germany. Friedensdorf International has been working in Afghanistan since 1988, so for nearly 40 years, bringing injured, sick children to Germany for treatment. And that was what we wanted to do again this time. So this time it was about the child presentation. That means parents bring their children to Kabul, the Afghan capital, present their children there who suffer from various ailments. And the staff of Friedensdorf then select those children, those who can be taken to Germany. It is a very, very bitter task. This time, more than 2,000 children were presented to us by their parents. We could take only 76 with us to Germany. 173 are being treated in Afghan hospitals. But of course, when you have to choose, that is a very burdensome and very difficult task for those who have to do it. At the beginning, while we were in Kabul and at this child presentation, we also hardly slept for 3 or 4 days, about an hour of sleep per night. And then we went on to Herat on the border with Iran, or rather we didn't go by car, but flew, because Herat is quite far from Kabul. And in Herat, we looked at the situation at the border. That is also a catastrophe, also a man-made catastrophe playing out there. Because since mid-June, Iran, the mullah regime in Iran, has been deporting Afghan refugees and migrant workers back to Afghanistan. That is 1.5 million people since mid-June, including people who have lived in Iran for decades and are now being pushed back into a homeland where, as mentioned, the economic situation is already very, very difficult. So again, a catastrophic situation. And at the border, we spoke with many people about what is happening to them. They were all completely exhausted, without perspective, depressed, deported back to Afghanistan in buses with their few belongings. Now having to somehow figure out how to survive. Friedensdorf provided support there on site, organized food, medicine, especially for children. And then in Herat, we received the news of the earthquake in the east, on the exact opposite side of the country, on the border with Pakistan. There the earth shook massively with a magnitude of 6.0. that is actually not extremely high. But the thing is that in Afghanistan, especially in rural areas, construction is very simple. These are houses, very simple stone houses built from roughly stacked stones. And this way of building means they are not at all resistant when earthquakes occur. That was also the case here. So the earth shook. And already that morning, when it was said there had been an earthquake, there was talk of hundreds of dead, and it was clear the numbers would rise massively. So we decided to go there, to the earthquake region, to see the situation on the ground. And secondly, we decided to organize medicines, so-called health kits, large packages of medicine for a total of 40,000 people. They actually arrived 2 days later in the earthquake area and were then distributed by mobile teams. So as I said, we first flew back to Kabul and then traveled by vehicle toward Kunar. Kunar is a province in the east of the country, the province most affected by the earthquakes. And that was already a very, very tough journey, one has to say. You have to imagine it is a mountain region, and within this mountain region, there is a valley. And into this valley, we drove deeper and deeper into the mountains. But the roads in Afghanistan are simply a total disaster, especially in rural areas. There you only have a narrow, dusty dirt track, stony and rough, along which all the aid trucks moved, pickups with dozens of volunteers who wanted to provide help to pull people out of the rubble. It was unbelievably chaotic. Sometimes for hours you couldn't move forward or backward because the traffic was jammed. A very, very difficult situation.
And yes, when we were finally there, the talk was already of more than 1,500 dead. As mentioned, the numbers have since risen. At the time of this podcast recording, we are at about 2,200. It is still assumed that many dead remain under the rubble. And in some villages, simply every family has lost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 relatives. We then went to a small village called Sumai. It was a small village. There were 8 dead and 22 injured. And there I met, among others, Syed Khan. His house was destroyed. We went into this village on foot because there was no access for cars. We had to push through the landscape a bit. And then he stood there in this village, his house on a slope, completely destroyed. It was just a wasteland of rubble. The stones rolled down the entire hill. And as I said, he stood there. Right next to his house was a small self-made cemetery, and there he had already buried his relatives who had died in this earthquake, his wife and his 5-year-old granddaughter. And there he sat in the middle of the rubble, telling us what had happened.
At night, we had just gone to sleep. It was around 11:30, 11:45. Then the earthquake happened. It destroyed everything, also the animals. Some of them are still lying under the rubble.
The people in Kunar, in this region where we were traveling, are very simple people. They mostly live from agriculture in this valley. Scenically, it looks beautiful there, one must say. Lush green cornfields and rice fields down in the valley. A river also runs through this valley. And it really looks totally idyllic. And that was such a stark contrast to what had happened there. As I said, we drove through the villages, saw the destruction, saw how all the helpers arrived, especially from the Afghan Red Crescent. They set up their field hospitals there to help. We saw the destroyed houses. And that was such a strong contradiction to the idyll that the landscape actually is. And then I also spoke with Zahir Khan about how things would continue for him now. And he also didn't really know, since he is a simple farmer, he naturally doesn't have many savings and he didn't really know how to go on. The government, as we heard on the way to Sumai, wanted to reactivate an old American camp, a military base. In Hunan, we also passed by, and there you could see various buildings. And it was said they wanted to reactivate this military base in order to house people there who had lost everything. It is said that in this earthquake, at least 8,000 buildings were completely destroyed. The people, as I said, have nothing, no savings with which they could somehow rebuild their villages or their houses. So now one just has to see what will happen to these people. And as I said, the government is trying to reactivate this camp. And I also spoke with Syed about it, but he said, "This is my home. Here are my loved ones. Here my loved ones are now also buried. And actually, I don't want to leave here at all." But on the other hand, he also doesn't know how things will continue for him. Afghanistan, one must say, belongs to the countries most at risk from earthquakes in the world.
As mentioned, there are tectonic plates rubbing against each other, the Indian and Eurasian plates, also the Arabian plate. And so there are again and again massive earthquakes. As mentioned, in 2023, the major earthquake in Herat with 1,500 dead. Last year, there were also smaller tremors. It is said that since 1990, more than 350 quakes with a strength of more than 5 have been registered in Afghanistan. And especially the east of the country, where now this current earthquake took place, is one of the most affected regions. And every year, on average, more than 500 people die from tremors. And for many families, that means, well, they rebuild their houses from clay and stone if they have some savings, a little something that allows them to do so. And then, in the worst case, a few years later, they are buried again under the rubble. Also in Sumai, this village where we were, it was said that 6 years ago there had also been such an earthquake, not quite as catastrophic as this one, but they were already used to it. And what I found shocking was also the number of aftershocks. The earth kept shaking, kept jolting, and this went on for days. In some cases, I think 4 days later, there were still aftershocks. That, of course, greatly unsettled people. And it was also difficult for the helpers who went into the disaster area, because much of what was destroyed was then also damaged further by landslides or rockfalls. And because of these aftershocks, there was, of course, the danger that helpers might also be buried under the rubble or be endangered. In Sumai, I also met Murtaza Safi. He is 30 years old, also a farmer. He survived the quake, but his brother did not. Murtaza told me the story, and it was very moving, because while telling it, he simply began to cry. He sat outside on a wooden cot in front of the rubble of his house, and then they had set up a provisional pavilion with tarpaulins stretched over it. It was very, very hot, one must also say. This region reminds you a bit of Southeast Asia in terms of the weather, very humid, very hot. And so they set up this provisional pavilion. It was very touching when I met this Murtaza, because he sat there on this wooden bench or wooden cot, seemed very helpless, naturally sad. And then there was a helper from the Afghan Red Crescent who recited and sang a morning prayer, an Islamic one, and the men had gathered there to give him comfort. And Murtaza then told how he had experienced the night.
When the first earthquake came, just before midnight, we all woke up. At that time, I was already injured because I had just had surgery before. I fell out of bed and tried to get up. My father came into my room to help me, but I told him, "Go and check on my brother." He went to check on him, but he was not there. Then the house collapsed and my brother was buried under the rubble.
It is a bit difficult. The helpers were then able to pull the brother out of the rubble at first, but he later died in the hospital. And the problem was also that Murtaza himself, as he told, had just come out of the hospital because his back had been operated on. And actually, he needs rest. Actually, he somehow has to recover from this hospital stay. And now he lies there or sits there in front of his house, in front of the rubble of his house. And similarly to Syed Khan, does not know how things will continue. And then the village elder of this village also made it clear to me again what dimensions this catastrophe had only for his village. As I said, 8 dead in this small village alone, 22 injured. And then the village elder told what happened afterward.
Almost 100 houses have been completely destroyed. Nobody helps us. We sleep in the sun, in the rain. You are the first ones who even ask how we are. We cannot rebuild this ourselves.
That is exactly such a problem in Afghanistan. They told us that they had received help only briefly, so there were helpers from the Afghan Red Crescent. The Afghan Red Crescent is, so to speak, the counterpart to the Red Cross that we have in Germany. And they came in for a short time, helped to recover the injured and the dead. But then they moved on deeper into the mountains, where the destruction was even worse and larger. And the people were somewhat helpless, not knowing how things would continue, whether anyone would help them at all. We were the first internationals who were there. You could also notice, for example, Claudia Peppmüller was the spokesperson of Friedensdorf International. She has blonde hair and always has problems with her headscarf. She somehow never really manages to keep the headscarf properly on her head. In any case, you always see her blonde hair. For the people in that village, that was a sensation. I think it was the first time they had seen a foreign woman. And yes, as I said, we were the first who came there to check things out and also to offer help. As I mentioned, we had organized medicines and then also offered that medicines would be brought into the village. But beyond that, we could not promise much more. And well, even if these houses were rebuilt, one has to assume that the next catastrophe will certainly come. Because Afghanistan, as I said at the beginning, is not only threatened by earthquakes, but also by the consequences of climate change. For example, what we experienced last year in Afghanistan, in the province of Bahlan, flash floods that swept away entire villages. On the other hand, one sees completely dried out, formerly fertile fields where the soil is already sealed because in some parts there have been years-long droughts. So in parts of Afghanistan, it sometimes hasn't rained for years. And when heavy rainfall then comes after it hasn't rained for years, the soil is so sealed that it cannot absorb the water anymore and flash flood events occur. And that was also something we experienced last year in Bahlan. Then in that province alone, hundreds of people drowned in these flash floods. And yes, what shall I say? It is simply catastrophic. And in Afghanistan, one disaster just comes after the next. In addition, because of the difficult economic situation, millions of people do not have enough to eat. The UN says at least half the population is urgently dependent on aid. At the same time, however, the number of international NGOs, international aid organizations, has actually decreased since the Taliban takeover, the retaking of power by the Taliban 4 years ago. And as I said, one thing just adds to another, and that was also the case now in the earthquake situation. The Afghan Red Crescent was active there. Larger organizations came in, at least through local partners. The World Food Program, for example, the large UN organizations, UNHCR or UNICEF, then Welthungerhilfe and such organizations, which, however, work locally with partners on the ground and came in. But one noticed that it took a very, very long time before aid arrived in the earthquake areas. That is, of course, partly because these earthquake areas are very, very inaccessible, as I already described with the roads that lead there. It is really difficult to steer aid properly into those areas. We then, in another village, visited a field hospital of the Afghan Red Crescent. As I said, the organization most strongly represented there. And there, in one tent, we met two women who were sitting there in burqas. A burqa is this full body covering, usually in blue. The two also wore such a dark blue burqa. You know it from the pictures, these typical images from Afghanistan with the narrow mesh windows in front of the eyes. And you could also sense from the two women that they did not really feel comfortable in these burqas. And it was apparently also unusual for them. But anyway, one of the two women was called Bibi Amena, and she was a psychotherapist. She told us that she was, of course, specifically responsible for the women there on site, and that the women needed a great deal of encouragement because they were depressed. Many, as I said, had lost relatives. Many did not know how things would continue for them. And she then said how they tried to provide support.
We tell them that was Allah's will, not that of humans. Allah could have taken us all, but you are still alive and there is hope. You are mothers. You can do this.
So it is mainly encouragement. We then also asked whether they had medication against depression, and they did not have anything like that on site. So psychotherapeutic support there actually works, or at least at first works, through conversations. That is what these two women did. One was Bibi Amena, as I said, the psychotherapist you just heard. And then there was her colleague Satima. She was a midwife and a doctor. She also told us how difficult it is to help in these regions as a woman.
Yes, we wear the burqa because of the culture, because of the tradition, and because you men are here. When you are gone, we take it off.
That is, of course, exactly the kind of thing that is always circulated when it comes to Afghanistan. After we came back, I also saw a report in the New York Times, which by now very, very, very many German media are also referring to, according to which women supposedly were not helped. So women who were buried, women who were lying under the rubble because the Taliban had supposedly issued a kind of ban on touching. Yes, that exists. The Taliban are, after all, radical Islamists who discriminate against women and who also have difficulties with women speaking with men, strange men, and with women actually being touched. But in this specific case of catastrophe, at least that was what we saw on the ground. Doctors, both female and male, of course, provided help there. I saw videos of doctors, of male doctors who carried out resuscitation attempts on women. They had pulled out of the rubble. And of course, male helpers also pulled women out of the rubble. The Afghan Red Crescent compiled statistics according to which their helpers alone, mostly male helpers, provided emergency medical care to 1,700 women and 1,500 men. So this report, it may of course be that some lunatics and some super radical idiots in individual cases prevented women from being pulled out. I cannot rule that out. But overall, I think such a report, which unfortunately, as I said, has now been quoted everywhere, presents, at least in part, a distorted picture of the situation. I simply saw how thousands of people voluntarily set out to help people out of this rubble. And that, regardless of the gender of the victims, and I always find it a bit difficult when only one picture of Afghanistan is circulated, I believe that this does not do justice to the people who worked day and night to help the victims of this earthquake. To be honest, I always find that a bit problematic. And I took away other impressions. The hospitals are full of injured women, children, or adolescent girls. And that is also an indication that they were not left under the rubble, but that they were helped. And, well, maybe just as a little aside, in this field hospital near this small village, I also spoke with a doctor. He was a young man who, like his entire team, looked really tired, black-rimmed eyes, really tired, really exhausted. And you could tell that they had already been working day and night without pause. He also briefly told me how they perceived the situation and what they had done so far. Yes, we have been here since the first earthquake.
Yeah, we are here from the since the first attack of the earthquake. And we are here delivering first aid and trauma care services to the affected people. And day and night we are here having a camp, staying a night and serving to our people. We are doing in first 2 days we are just providing trauma care, because the affected people came to our camp. They are their first need was to control their and stabilize their trauma. So after that, as you know, post disaster consequences, like we have now no safe water, hygiene and sanitation also you know, they are destroyed. So we are now giving first aid and trauma care, as well as RMNCH
what he says, no clean water, a main problem that we were told again and again there. So we saw both with the doctor and midwife and psychotherapist, as well as with the doctors in another tent, patients, little patients, children who had come because on the one hand they had diarrheal diseases and on the other hand were dehydrated. One leads to the other, so diarrheal disease leads to dehydration. And why this diarrheal disease? Because the children drank from the river, since there simply was no fresh water anymore. The water pipes in the villages were also destroyed by this earthquake, or the earthquake and the later aftershocks. And so people were forced to drink from the river, and that in turn led to these diarrheal diseases, which in turn led to dehydration. And in this respect, it was quite good that our medicines then arrived directly on site, because that, of course, helped to treat the people accordingly. Before the earthquake, at least 84,000 people are said to have been affected, at least 8,000 houses destroyed. As I just said, in some villages where we traveled, literally every family had lost relatives. And the intense thing was, as I said, when we were also in the field hospital, there was especially this tent. And then I spoke with a helper from this Afghan Red Crescent, completely friendly, completely nice. And suddenly he somehow looks at me very grimly, I thought at first, and pushes me aside and runs away. And I think, what did I do now? So I thought I had somehow offended him, or I don't know what, because I simply had not noticed. But then it turned out that apparently there had been another tremor, which I strangely did not notice, but everyone else around me, and he did. And then he looked at me with such an ashen face and said, "Oh God, I'm going to have a heart attack. if this continues here. And of course, that is also a problem. As I already said earlier, for the helpers as well, an enormous psychological burden, these constant earthquakes when you are in the middle of the mountains, where on the right the mountain slope goes up, on the left is a precipice, when you drive along the road, and then the earth shakes and you don't know whether some rocks will come down again from the mountain slope. That is, of course, very, very difficult. Yes, and now it is still summertime. I said earlier, Southeast Asian climate basically in this region of Kunar, also in the region of Langarha, the neighboring province. Very warm, very humid, still bearable because you have to sleep outside. But winter is at the door. And now what the people are lacking, so the first aid went quite well, as far as medicines, as far as food. But what must now happen in the perspective is that this help for the affected people is continued, that they get some kind of shelters. For example, this camp, this former US military camp in Kunar, which is supposed to be reactivated so that people can be accommodated there. But that will certainly all cost money. And as I said earlier, we were in Herat on the border, far in the west of the country, 1.5 million deported Afghan people from Iran. And after we were in the earthquake area, we were also for a few hours at the Pakistani border. And at the Pakistani border, exactly the same happens as at the border between Iran and Afghanistan. So Pakistan also deports Afghan refugees who in part have lived in Pakistan for decades, by now about 2.5 million. So altogether, we already have 4 million additional people who migrate into this already tense economic situation. And of course, that completely overwhelms the Taliban government, especially since, as I also already said, many international NGOs have left the country. So one thing builds up after another. And as I said, now the earthquake victims are also added. It is simply a very, very difficult situation. And I know that Afghanistan, of course, does not have a good reputation. That also comes from the reporting. I already told you earlier about this New York Times report, which is now quoted everywhere, that women allegedly were not helped during this earthquake situation. Those are reports that, of course, darken the image of Afghanistan even further. But in the end, this turning away from Afghanistan leads to those being punished, whom one supposedly means to protect, namely women and children. They are always the first ones in all disaster areas worldwide, in all wars worldwide, who suffer the most from such conflicts, from such crises. And when the world turns away from Afghanistan because one says one does not want in any way to support this Taliban regime, then women and children will suffer even more. And that is simply such a dilemma situation, which one has to somehow clarify for oneself, I think. And I believe the people deserve help. I have simply seen, also now on our last trip again, how people themselves try to support each other and to help each other. There were, as I said, thousands of volunteers who simply went to this earthquake area to provide support there. The government tries within its possibilities to do everything so that people do not starve. And I believe Afghanistan definitely deserves that we continue to provide help in perspective. And I hope that this also happens. Because, as I said, Afghanistan is simply an incredibly battered country. And the people simply do not deserve to be left alone and abandoned. That was Im Krisenmodus. This podcast was produced by Alexander Baumeister. He is also a journalist at the radio station of the Funke Media Group. If you like our podcast, leave us a like, write a comment, or follow us. Every 2 weeks, In Crisis Mode is released in English and produced with the help of AI. See you soon. Take care. Ciao, ciao. All the best.
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.